And the previous program was Quantum Medicine, hosted and produced by Dr. Kamau Kakai, and that's heard Tuesdays at 2:30 p.m. Stay tuned for Black Star News with Milton Adamadi. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.
Greetings, sisters and brothers. Welcome to Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM radio. I'm your host, Milton Alimadi. We have a very important show today. We're dealing with issues of mental illness, mental well-being. And our guest, I will introduce her in a moment. But listeners, as usual, as you know, this is how I start the show. I need to remind you that WBAI is commercial-free, listener-supported, and that's how we're able to bring you quality programming. So I remind you, give what you can. Times are tough, I understand that, but give you what you can, and you can do so by dialing 516-620-3602, or you can even do something better. You can become a WBAI buddy, in which case the money is taken out of your credit or debit card on a monthly basis, and select one or more of your favorite shows. And I certainly hope Black Star News Show is one of your favorite shows. You can do so by going to give, and then the number 2, WBAI.org. That's how you can support us by becoming a buddy. Let me now welcome our guest today, Dr. Mawia Kambon. She is a psychologist. She believes in mental health and healing for African peoples. And she's also the founder of Black Therapy Central. And in a minute, she'll tell us what that means. And she also talks about the importance of dealing with the ruptures and intergenerational trauma. And she will address that as well, in addition to the contemporary challenges that our people face. Dr. Kambon, welcome to Black Star News Show.
And thank you so much for having me.
Did I leave anything out critical in the introduction? I know you've been in the field for almost 3 decades now.
Yes, more than 3 decades now.
Okay.
And
you were at one time the president of the National Association of Black Psychologists. That is correct, right?
That's correct. And we're an international body.
Okay, very good. The floor is all yours now. Tell us the importance. And you also actually talk about, because you're trained as a traditional healer. So I want you to try to get that as part of this conversation today as well. But we're dealing with challenging times. We don't need to spend too much time in the background, the historical trauma that you talk about, and then the contemporary challenge, not only the coronavirus, but the pandemic of police criminality against our African peoples. So address those issues, please, in any which way that you prefer.
Okay, and there's so many. Hopefully you will nudge me as I move through.
Absolutely, of course.
I'd like to continue to introduce myself And I am co-founder of BlackTherapyCentral.com, along with my daughter, Nataki, who is a business consultant and saw through her own experience the need for us to really push this forward to our community. So, yes, I'm a past president of National Association and International Association, and was the president at the time when we took 500 members and their families to Ghana, West Africa, because we saw the need to do more than what the psychology we had been trained in was doing. And so we knew that we had to be grounded in our own tradition.
And talk about the importance of that. Talk about the importance of that.
Right. The founders of that association left the APA in 1968 because they already recognized that. However, as we had not been trained in our own culture to understand truly what that means, what I have to say is that spirit was speaking through them. And initially, we just started putting black paint on white psychology. You know, we knew it didn't relate to us. So we took the same concepts and tried to make them more black. We have evolved over these 52 years now, to realize that we have to disband that whole concept in the first place because it didn't relate to us. And so we became more of an African-centered focus. Black Therapy Central evolved as a result of understanding that that focus needed to have an African center. And so therefore, Nataki and I launched this. She had been trying to engage the association for at least 8 years. And when that didn't come to fruition, she asked me if I'd be willing to go ahead and turn it into more than just a referral source, which it is, but into a movement to really understand what black therapy should be. And so I engage other psychologists who I've been working with over the years or had witnessed their work over the years, who also had the same kind of thrust and impetus in them. And so one of our elders, our elder advisor, is indeed one of the founders of that association, and that association is near and dear to his heart, Dr. Wade Noble, whom many people know. So if you don't know him, please go and Google him. And then we have others as well, from millennials to us as elders, who create the concepts and create the themes and create the ideas, taking from our people what health, wellness, and healing is all about. So that is what Black Therapy Central is about. And through that, we also recognize that during this month, Black August, which I hope has been promoted throughout our country, Black August in the U.S. has meant a view and understanding and appreciation and awareness of the struggles our people have gone through. And we move beyond February, which was given to us first as a day, then a week, then a month, to an understanding that we need a time that wasn't cold and that was vibrant, that reflected our history. So we know that the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey was born in this time. We understand that George Jackson was killed in San Quentin at this time. Right. We understand that many black events and political prisoners in particular are honored during this time. So we thought that this would be a wonderful time to talk about wellness and healing for black people. And so we also have promoted a global, not just U.S., but global black mental health awareness month. So that is a part of what this whole movement is about, and part of what I really want us to focus on today as well, that this is Global Black Mental Health Awareness Month, and that Black Therapy Central, along with other black healing associations, are promoting at this time.
Excellent. Thank you for that introduction. In fact, as I'm listening to you, I myself want to go on the website immediately. So we'll get to that before the end of the show. I want you to provide all the information, but let's continue with the conversation. Now, first of all, as an aside, because here we're talking about the training that everybody gets, whether it's in science or any other professional field or medicine, and then adapting it to make sure that it is relevant to our communities. As I'm listening to you, I'm saying to myself, this should apply to every profession that our people are involved in training, in terms of making it much more applicable and relevant. But then give us some examples of how you adapt that training to address the specific needs of our people.
As you mentioned, all of us who are called psychologists go through the academies that are irrelevant to us. There are probably one or two programs in the country. One I'm thinking of, Dr. Linda James Myers in Ohio, and the one that Dr. Kobe Kambon promoted at FAMU in Florida, are the only ones that try to look at who we are in training psychologists. But all of them, we're not trying to really adapt. We're trying to throw them out and create for us what was already created by our people centuries ago.
And so thank you so much for that correction. Thank you. I appreciate that correction. Proceed.
Yeah, we take it back to ancient Semitic, right, where we look at the principles of Ma'at, you know, justice, propriety, all of those things. Those are ours. We can't take somebody else's point of view and adapt it to that. We have to start there. And that is what we're trying to do. We're trying to use those principles, those ways of being, those ways of knowing. So what the psychology we were trained in talks about, what is the problem? In African healing systems, we talk about why is this problem occurring and why now? So it takes in sometimes, a lot of times, most of the time, more than that individual who has come to see us. We look at the family. We look at the community. We look at their relationship with the creator. We look at their relationship with the world and see what is going on, what is misaligned, and how and we can bring that back into alignment with their purpose on earth. That is not something we're ever taught about. Probably the closest to that would might be the Jungian theory, which was taken from ancient Kemet, and he adopted it. He adapted it to his way. But again, it started with us because it is about us.
Okay, so now if I were to ask you, would you be able to give me an estimate what percentage of our psychologists are engaged in the approach that you and your colleagues are using now? And how can we get more aware of this approach and become involved?
Yes, very few, I might say, because we, as in every profession, we believe that their ice is colder and that they are right. And so it takes a while. So you know that when somebody comes into your office, they're different. And so because of who you are, you make some adjustments. But in order to be trained in that, there we have a certain curriculum that we have been adopting in the Association of Black Psychologists. And we here on Black Therapy Central, along with them, will be providing webinars where people can be trained and receive certification. We have a certification called the Certification to be an African Black Psychologist. And so the certificates that you will get from being a part of our webinars will allow you to do that. So yes, we indeed are training. And again, I might say that you don't have to be a psychologist. You have to be in this profession. So the Black social workers apply. The Black nurses apply. The licensed professional counselors apply. So that all of us are about the work of healing our communities, bringing us back to a sense of an acknowledgement of who we are and whose we are. And so I encourage them to go to Black Therapy Central to join our webinars and become trained as African-centered psychologists, as African-centered facilitators of healing. So we often call ourselves healers, But I often correct that we are facilitators of healing. The healing occurs within the individual. The strength that they have is already there. The spirit that will guide them is already there. It is our job to assist them to find that path, to get on that path, and to do the healing that will take them to the wellness that they will then be able to move forward in this world very differently than we have been doing for the last 500-600 years in this country.
Listeners, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Black Star News Show on WBI 99.5 FM radio. Our guest today is Dr. Mawia Kamban. She is an African Black psychologist, a facilitator of healing. And that is a discussion we are having. And I can already tell that we are definitely going to have her back for part two, because in the remaining time that we have, I am not going to be able to ask all the questions that are just popping in my mind just as I am listening to her. Dr. Kamban, I want to start from something very basic. Sometimes we don't know that we need healing. It's not like we can take a mental temperature. How do we know when we need healing? What are some of the signs that we need to be aware of?
Well, my brother, I might say that all of us need healing. All of us who have come up in this country, I might even say in the world, where we have been dominated by white terror.
Thank you for that.
We all need to understand that that is what it is, and that we need to heal from that. And because we have functioned in this world, and we all haven't committed suicide, we all haven't gone to drinking, we all haven't gone to drugs, which are coping mechanisms to deal with this, doesn't mean that we're not all suffering from it. And so many of us have understood this in some ways and have been out here teaching and preaching. So Malcolm X wasn't a psychologist, but truly he was about helping our people heal by pointing out the problems that we face every day. Marcus Garvey wasn't a psychologist, but he had a structured, systematic plan for us going about organizing to be the greatest people that we have always been, and that is healing. So healing comes about in many ways. In our profession, if I might call it, we understand that that must occur. And so therefore we look at how we create systems to help that move forward. And it always begins, what I say, with spirit, understanding that we are spirit, and therefore how do we help our spirit to be in alignment? How do we help this human self be in alignment with that spirit that can guide us to wholeness, to wellness, to healing?
Dr. Kamban, do you have a book? Because as I'm listening to you, I just don't want you to stop talking. And that is why the
Many
question is popping
have
themselves.
Asked me to write this book. Right. Many people have asked me to write a book, and I'm so busy. I'm also an activist. And I thank you so much for asking that I'm, you know, because you have asked, I might lend myself. My daughter even tells me, write more articles. And I know how important that is. I do constantly work at facilitating this healing. And I know that writing is a part of that. And we do have many illustrious people in our field, like who are now ancestors, like Amos Wilson and Asa Hilliard, but the living all, and Kobe Kamban, and the living also like Wade Nobles and others. So yes, the healing needs to occur, the writing needs to occur, but I have to say, no, I think I have an article in one book, I can't even remember the name of it. To Heal a People, that's the name of the book. I have an article in there, but I must get to the task of putting these thoughts and ideas down. There are many who contribute to my thinking, and I am grateful to them, and I give thanks to them every day.
Believe me, whether you're on this show in the future or not, I'm going to be encouraging people to send you an email message to urge you to write that book, to start and to finish that book. Dr. Kambon, talk to us about the trips that you made with people that were seeking healing to Ghana.
Okay, so they can email me at blacktherapycentral@gmail.com or Dr. Mawia Kambon at blacktherapycentral.com. But the journeys started with my own. I was fortunate enough in 1972 as a grad student to be able to go on a journey with the now ancestor Nana Yao Apari Denizulu out of New York. And he took a whole chartered plane load of black people to Ghana for 6 weeks. And I just bought a ticket. I didn't have accommodations or anything, but I was going on that trip. And that was the beginning. When I became more active in the Association of Black Psychologists, I was a General Assembly chair, and we talked about having a backward journey to Africa, and I suggested Ghana be the place. So it was between Ghana and Senegal, and fortunately for me, Ghana won. I did not know at that time that I would be the president when we made that journey. So we all were very active in following that course. And through that time, understanding, I also was fortunate enough to go to a meeting, a conference for the black social workers, where they were doing their installment of their president in African style. I went back to our association and said, we can no longer have a ceremony for our incoming president that's not based on who we are as a people. And so again, Dr. Wade Nobles was charged to come up with the ceremony that we still follow today to install our presidents based on Ghanaian principles. But again, as I say, Ghanaian, we're not limited. We don't see the borders that others see. Wherever our people are in the world, that's our land. And that continent, without those borders that were created against us, is our land wherever we are. So we are practicing or doing this according to the Ghanaian ways of installing a chief, a king, a warrior. But we recognize that we are African people throughout the globe. And so it started there, and we developed. And so we started then by taking our association to Ghana in 2000. In 1998, through the Sankofa journey, I had already begun to take groups of people on the Sankofa journey to Ghana, West Africa. And I still do that today. So I recommend people check out the website, sankofajourney.com, where we still take people, not on a trip, but a journey. And all people aren't understanding of what that is. So we're not going to lounge on at the Holiday Inn or the Best Western on the beaches. We're going to take people into the interior because our people still live the way they did centuries ago. You know, so maybe they have electricity, but many do not. So we want them to understand that those traditions that have been a part of us still exist, and those healing traditions. So people still use the herbs as medicine. They use the spirit divination as medicine. They use the rocks. All of nature is our medicine cabinet, and we continue to use that. And we wanted our psychologists, our black psychologists, to understand that the world is our medicine, and that all we needed to do was to help guide people back to healing, and then that could occur. So that's how those journeys began. That year in 2000 was tremendous. We were able to take the people to the dungeons down on the coast, which people sometimes call castles, but we call them dungeons because that's what our experience was there. Right. And they had experiences there. We took them up. We had an audience with the Asante Henny, who is still the Asante Henny today. Right. Not many people get to do that, but we had an audience with him. And his other kings, where we got to receive his blessings as we move forward. We went to traditional spiritual ceremonies with Nana Abbas and others. We had a conference there where we invited and had speakers like Kofi Asari Opoku, who has written the book about traditional religions in Africa, and the book Hearing and Keeping, which is a book of Proverbs. So that's what we exposed our people to. And we were at the University of Ghana that graciously hosted us. And so we were grateful to have that experience. We were grateful for our association as well as our families to have that experience, to understand the richness and the vastness of our traditions.
So I imagine some people that are listening to you now are saying to themselves, I've been seeing a psychologist for years, but perhaps I've been seeing the wrong type of psychologist. And what do you say to them?
That's quite possibly true. You know, if you're not getting better and you've been there for years, then perhaps you can fire your psychologist, just like you can fire your medical doctor, and people don't realize that. If you're going to a doctor that's not providing you with the healing you need, then you need to find one that can. Many of the people that come to me after a session say, I already feel healed, even though we know that we haven't addressed all the things that they come with. And that's because when I sit down, I bring all of my energy with me. And it's to greet all of the energy with you. And so you are not separate from me. We are a family. And it is that family tradition. You know, yes, we may not sit down and break bread together yet, but that family tradition is still a part of the work we do. So all of me comes to greet all of you and invite you in to share not only the problems that you're facing, but the strengths that you have, because we're going to use those strengths to assist you. And you mentioned the intergenerational issues and trauma that we experience. We also understand that the trauma, not only from you, but maybe from your great-great-grandmother, still is a part of you. And right. You have come to me now because it's time to stop. It's time to end. It's time to let the healing occur. And so Global Black Mental Health Awareness Month across the globe is to help our people understand that, yes, we are an African-centered people, and it is through that that healing will occur, that this pain and suffering that we have experienced over these past few centuries, not forever, but over these past few centuries, will end now, because you have come to ensure that it will not continue.
Dr. Kambon, maybe one final question. To people that still are hesitant, because as you know, traditionally, historically, in recent times, people that seek healing for mental issues are stigmatized and almost demonized. Say something to people like that.
I say to you, wholeness is in your path. Wellness is in your path. You may have tried many things before, but give African-centered healing an opportunity to engage you in your own journey to wellness and wholeness. We are here to respond to you. You have a right to question anything we present to you, but come. We can be rid of the traumas that we have experienced. This is a new day for us, and we are moving forward, and there are those of us willing to help you go forward. One of the good things about this COVID is that people have gone to the internet to listen to people who have an understanding of what I'm talking about. So come on blacktherapycentral.com. We have a radio program. We're going to be doing these webinars. And we invite you, go to blacktherapycentral.com and find out how you can begin or continue or find a different path to wholeness and wellness.
Dr. Mawia Kamban.
Our rodeo program. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for your time. We'll definitely have you back on the show again. You gave out the website. Do you want to share your email again? And could you spell it out?
Okay, it's Dr. Mawia Kamban at blacktherapycentral.com. Dr. D-R, no period. Okay. Mawia, M-A-W-I-Y-A-H. Kamban, K-A-M-B-O-N, at blacktherapycentral.com.
Thank you so much. Stay well, and we'll have you very soon again, as I'm sure many people want to listen to more of what you have to say. Thank you.
And thank you so much for having me.
They just keep holding me, won't let go. Holding me, won't let go. I need armor to armor them down. I need armor to ram them down. They just keep teasing me. And you know they play like they don't know, provoking me. But this is all I know. I need a rama to ram them down. I need a rama to hammer them down.
Greetings, sisters and brothers. Welcome back to the second half hour of Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM radio. And I'm your host, Milton Alimadi. Our guest in the second half hour is a young filmmaker, Theo Rogers. And his film is called Milwaukee in Pain. So why don't we listen to a little bit of this film, a little clip of the film right here.
Coronavirus have affected us in so many ways, multiple ways. Of course, the number one way is it has affected us in doing funerals. I would say the funerals has definitely gone up at least with the virus, at least 30%, at least 30%.
So, I mean, it definitely affected my business in a major way because still to this day, I have not gotten any funding at all as it relates to the shutdown.
I'm a DJ and I work in the clubs. So, you know, like he got a lounge and I usually work in lounges and clubs too. So with that being closed, you know, it do kind of affect us. It definitely affected, you know, me financially. The business is at a standstill. I've been open for 3 months before this happened. So, I mean, I'm a small business, so I didn't see none of the stimulus from that.
COVID-19 has affected the Black households and Black businesses pretty tremendously. Over 95% of Black businesses are expected to not be able to partake of any of the COVID-19 CARES Act relief. In the African American community, most Black businesses do not have relationships with banks that can fund small business loans.
Okay, Theo Rogers, welcome to Black Star News Show.
Oh, thank you for having me. A pleasure to be here.
Excellent. Okay, the name of the film, Milwaukee in Pain. You made this film to highlight the intersection between a historical impoverishment, racism, segregation, in Milwaukee, in Wisconsin, and the collision with the coronavirus pandemic. And now we have a new tragedy in Milwaukee with the attempted execution of Jacob Blake on Sunday. So before we get into your film, I'd like you to actually talk about that. I mean, it's not surprising to me, but there's some people that are still deluded because of the protests that erupted after the execution of George Floyd, people thought, okay, this time things might be different. I wasn't one of those people. I thought and always believe it's going to take a lot more than that. So I wasn't particularly shocked when we got the news of this attempted execution of an unarmed black man shot multiple times in the back. It's in Milwaukee. So I want you to talk about that before we discuss your film. The floor is yours.
Yes. So this has been happening historically. The only difference is right now we have cameras, right? And so the city, this generation is not going for this. They're not going for this. They're fed up. And so this has been happening way too much, too often. And to be honest with you, the police departments don't care. They don't care. They're going to do what they want to do. And, you know, now it's up to the community to do something. That's why they're so enraged.
Okay, so you're saying you were not shocked as well, even after all the protests since the execution of George Floyd?
No, I'm not shocked at all. I'm not shocked at all. I'm pretty sure that these police officers are okay with doing this stuff, because what happens to these police officers, they get a free attorney, you know, they get some time off, they get paid without working. So they don't have any problems. And, you know, it's so funny to me that people are upset in Kenosha about what has happened to their city. But think about the kids that were in the car that seen their father get shot 7 times. Is that excessive? What happened to the tasers? Where are the tasers at? Why they didn't tase them? You know, you don't have to immediately shoot somebody. So they don't care. And I'm not shocked.
Or for whatever reason, if you wanted to keep him there, detain him there, why not shoot the tires out? You know, but that's not even the thought that goes into the mind, because the racism is so deep-seated. And I agree with you. This is the kind of stuff that you've been always doing and getting away with it. So why would you feel any different this time, right?
Exactly. But this new generation is not going for this. We got to make them take us seriously. And that's why they're doing the protesting and the marching right now. And we've been marching all month. We've been marching since George Floyd, the situation with George Floyd. And it's really upsetting. And now he has, you know, a pro defense attorney of Benjamin Crump, which, thank God. But Benjamin Crump was just here on the Joel Acevedo case that happened with a gentleman getting choked to death by another police officer. So, I mean, we're having these cases come often, way too often. And, you know, it's our opportunity right now to speak up and say something.
What will it take?
Well, obviously it will take for them to understand that we're not playing, that we need to come together.
And they should be careful, because I agree with you. People are fed up, right? There was a curfew. There was a curfew. People defy
the curfew. Holding
because
me.
I agree with you, they just don't care anymore. Won't let they defied
go.
The curfew, they ignored it, and they came
holding
out
me.
To show their rage. And if somebody is not doing this very carefully, we're going to have a situation where you see such multiple incidents in multiple cities on one given day, and that's when the world
eruption
that is yet to come.
Yeah, to this day, Milwaukee is always been segregated, and the low-income housing programs that were set up haven't helped Milwaukee in any type of fashion. And I'm saying Milwaukee because I'm from in between Milwaukee and Chicago. But these same systematic issues have been oppressing our community for years. And so the only way that...
And this is part of what you actually looked into in your film. This is what you explored in your film. And that's what's so interesting in the timing of your film. Also, you interview people talking about the legacy of historical poverty and segregation and discrimination in Milwaukee. And you're discussing how the challenge is now compounded with the coronavirus. And then now, before your film, which I think is today, on Tuesday, comes out, you have this shooting in one pile upon the pile of things. In fact, I like the beginning of the film where it's clear, where it says it's an epidemic, jumping on top of a bunch of other epidemics already on the black community. And we didn't know, obviously, that this incident was going to be added upon that. But I want you to talk a little bit about the film now. Tell listeners why you decided to make this film.
So I wanted to make the film because I realized that during this pandemic in March, they did a study that found out that more Africans died of COVID than any other community in the world as far as African Americans. And so I wanted to find out what was the issue and why this was happening. And I think from what you said earlier, from a pandemic on top of a pandemic, is because these systematic issues were already prevalent in Milwaukee. That's why it was so prevalent for Milwaukee to be having these issues. And so I wanted to get to the bottom of it. So, you know, I was speaking to a lot of my family members who were losing family members. And I decided to come to Milwaukee and hear from actual leaders, from professors, from church leaders, from senators, from everybody, to just to find out. And I wanted to talk from an angle from our leaders as African Americans, and I wanted them to tell the story. And so I wanted to get to the bottom of it, but I also wanted to leave a message of hope and to bring us that we can come together so that we can change, you know, our communities moving forward.
Now, one of the things that caught my attention was the discrimination and the way the public school students were treated during this pandemic. In certain schools, the kids got to take home their computers, right? And in certain schools, they were not allowed to take home their computers because they were not trusted, right? And as a result of that, they missed out on several weeks of schooling because obviously everything was online by then. Talk a little bit about that.
So, yeah, so the biggest issue is one of the major school districts in Milwaukee, that is the public school district. They had a lot of issues when it came to trusting in these impoverished areas with the students to take home their Chromebooks, right? Which is taking away from the child's education. Every person in the world, pretty much almost every person, has a smartphone. And so these children, a lot of times, they don't have any ability to get to the internet. So if you're not even giving them the opportunity to become a better student, then they're not going to be ready for this when it comes down to a pandemic. So now they got to give all of these students that don't have any Chromebooks. What they found out is all these Chromebooks are outdated. And so now you're giving the kids older computers and they still don't even have access. And so this is a public disgrace. This is a disgrace to our communities. And so I really wanted to get to the bottom of it. And so I went and spoke to someone that's really, really high up in the actual school district so she could just shed a lot of light on it. And in the documentary, she just talks about amazing things.
But you know what's very revealing about that, Theo? If you actually do something like that, you discriminate against a certain school district, right? And you say they don't deserve computers, knowing that they won't be able to access education, right? It means you really don't take their education seriously anyway, right? Think about that.
Right.
So in fact, they're exposing themselves much farther than even when they are in the school setting. They're just going through the motions. They're pretending to be educating these young kids. You know, how else would you do something like that, right?
At the least, you also is the education to succeed in life and to pursue. We have the right to pursue happiness. We have that right. So in order to have that right, we need to have an education system that works for us, that works for our community. We want to be able to have our own communities. We have the right for our First Amendment and our Second Amendment. So we have these rights. But how are you going to build a community if you're not allowing these people to come together to be better?
Yeah, you're right. And listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM radio. I'm talking to a young filmmaker, Theo Rogers. Before we continue our discussion, our listeners, I want to remind you that this is commercial-free, listener-supported. We bring you quality programming with your support. So I remind you to please pick up the phone. Whatever you can give, we will put to good use. Dial 516-620-3602 or support anyone or multiple of your favorite shows on WBAI, including Black Star News Show, of course. Go to give and then the number 2, WBAI.org. And that's how you can become a WBAI buddy. Theo Rogers, talk a little bit about some of the hopeful aspects too. You spoke to people who are changing their business models and using this trying, testing, challenging situation to remake themselves in order to survive. You interviewed several people like that. So that's what I like about your film. It's a short film. I think it's 35 minutes, but it packs a lot of punch. So talk about that. Talk about the hopeful signs.
So the hopeful signs is that during this pandemic, a lot of people, well, first of all, we're very resilient. And if you don't understand your culture as an African-American, you are very a resilient person. And so for our history, our ancestors have been able to change it up. And so during this pandemic, a lot of people, especially in education, they've been able to sit down and maybe take a couple more classes online, try to better themselves. Maybe a lot of older people have been taking the time to jump on YouTube and understand how to stream on Facebook, different things of that nature, because the internet's not going anywhere. It's actually going to help you more than anything. But also, even with that said, a lot of people have changed their business models. I have a young business owner that's on there that had a hookah business, and he decided to make it a mobile business, and he's made a tremendous amount more money than he used to make. And so he reinvented himself in order to be better. And so, I mean, there's just some awesome stories on the documentary, but I wanted to leave that message of hope that during this time, even though you're having issues during this pandemic, this is a time for you to reinvent yourself and try to be better.
We really have to, because you also had that stat from the National Bureau of Research that shows that 41% of Black-owned businesses have been lost since the pandemic. And in fact, one of the reasons you made this film was because you were affected as well. Tell listeners how your business was affected and how you got into this film.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, my business was actually put on hold. I'm in the live events industry. I have my own business where I actually do live events. I have a great production company in Las Vegas, Nevada. My hometown is, I'm a proud Milwaukeean. So I grew up in Milwaukee until I was in my 20s, and then I ended up graduating, going to college. But the great thing about this situation has made me find out what my true purpose was. And I really, really always wanted to do a documentary. This is my first documentary. So it made me go back to my roots, and it made me do something that I love, because I probably would have never did this if the pandemic never came, right? I would have had that one of those dreams. You know how you have dreams and you put them on the shelf and you say, well, you know, I'm going to get to it. And so I was able to go and grab that dream, get a production company in Milwaukee, grab and rent some gear and go and do it and find the people that I needed. And it's been an amazing experience. And I'm really excited for the world to see it today.
Well, I hope you're thinking of trying to, you know, after people get to know about this film, trying to do a similar study, a similar film for other cities. Look at after how African-American communities in other cities are being impacted, because some of these same issues that you looked into in Milwaukee impact African communities all over the country, including right here in New York City, which is my city. So I hope you have some plans of looking into doing something like that.
Yes, of course. I have a lot of plans. The only reason why I decided to do it in Milwaukee is because I knew enough people that I could probably, you know, get in contact with everyone that I needed to get in contact. And so what I'm hoping that happens from this actual film is that I'm able to have a bigger platform, have a lot more access, especially from your radio show. And hopefully I can come to New York and find some senators in New York and some politicians and some some school teachers and maybe some professors and some attorneys and some economists that can just tell me about the situations that they're having in their district. And I really wish if
anybody... just do the same model. That's a very good idea.
Right,
that's a very good idea. We're running out of time, so I don't want us to run out of time before you tell people how they can access this film. How is it being distributed? Somebody listening right now, what can they do?
You can find my movie at MilwaukeeInPain.com. That's MilwaukeeInPain.com. Or just go to hashtag, put in your browser hashtag MilwaukeeInPain, and you should be able to find me no problem. And it's going to be amazing because we're going to debut it at 12 a.m. So it's actually live right now. So you can go to MilwaukeeInPain and check it out.
Do you have any social media contacts for yourself that you want to share out to listeners?
Sure. For social media, go to Humble Ambitious Media. Search in Facebook. I'm Humble Ambitious Media. Go to Twitter, Humble Ambitious Media, as well as for Instagram, Humble Ambitious Media. That's H-U-M-B-L-E, Ambitious, A-M-B-I-T-I-O-U-S, and then that's Media, M-E-D-I-A. Humble Ambitious Media.
Any final words?
My final words is I appreciate it, and I feel that my people are going to come together. I can just feel it. 2020 is our year. We're going to come together as a community, and we're going to try to love each other, and we're going to make sure that we can bring our economic status above and become a community for the best.
On that note, thank you so much, and hopefully we'll have you back again in the near future. Listeners, that was Theo Rogers, a young filmmaker, and I'm your host, Milton Ali Mahdi, signing off the Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.FM radio. Make sure you also visit blackstarnews.com, and you can follow me at Ali Mahdi on Twitter. Be positive, be strong, remain Pan-African. See you next week.
Torrent of my long accumulating discontent with such vehemence and indignation that I stirred myself, as well as the rest of the party, to do and dare anything.
Elizabeth Cady Stanton on the eve of jumping into the fray. August 26th marks the 100th anniversary of women winning the vote after fighting for it for 75 years. WBAI will celebrate with 6 hours of programming from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. with authors, historians, dramatic readings, a play, period music, and more. We'll make this history come alive and find out what it has to teach us for today. That's Wednesday, August 26th, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. For a schedule, go to WBAI.org.
We are marching on.
WPFW in Washington, and WBAI in New York, I'm Amar Evering with some brief news headlines. As climate change-fueled wildfires spread across California, 7 people have been pronounced dead. Over 1.4 million acres have burned across the state, and over 1,000 incarcerated people are currently acting as firefighters to deal with this crisis. And in the same state of California, San Quentin Prison has a continued outbreak of COVID-19, with over 2,200 inmates out of their general population of 3,400 testing positive for the coronavirus. The remaining 1,200 are at risk for becoming positive. At least 24 inmates have died of the virus at San Quentin Prison. In prisons across the state of California, at least 52 prisoners have died. A video was released of farm workers in California still toiling in noxious smoke amid California's wildfires. In the video, the air is completely filled with smoke as workers continue to do agricultural work. Some have been spotted working almost next to fires, as reported by United Farm Workers. Climate activist Alexandria Villaseñor stated, quote, "The air quality index is 225+. And these farm workers in the Bay Area are still working, risking their lungs and lives to survive. This is environmental racism," end quote. According to a complaint filed by a Texas advocacy group, it has been reported that guards at an immigrant detention facility in El Paso, Texas, systematically sexually assaulted and harassed inmates. These allegations include guards attacking victims in spots that could not be viewed by cameras. Immigrant Customs Enforcement, or ICE, has a history of reported sexual and physical abuse allegations for over the past 10 years. In Kenosha, Wisconsin, many are demanding justice and want answers for Jacob Blake, an unarmed black man who was shot in his back several times by police officers on Sunday, while his 3 sons, who are 3, 5, and 8 years old, looked on. Though Blake is expected to survive, he will likely be paralyzed from the waist down. The Southern Poverty Law Center has called for a, quote, "immediate and transparent investigation into the shooting as protests continue." The Southern Poverty Law Center also wants an investigation into the killing of Trayford Pellerin, a 31-year-old black man in Louisiana who was fatally shot on Friday night by police. The Republican Party began its convention yesterday, praising Trump as a national hero. A parade of speakers positioned Trump as a defender of, quote, "Western civilization and the American way of life." Democrats were described as Marxists seeking to erase American history. The popular app TikTok is suing President Trump over his executive order to ban the app. TikTok is owned by the Chinese company ByteDance. This ban is seen as a part of Trump's larger campaign of anti-China rhetoric that has been increased over the past few months, along with hate crimes against Asian Americans. TikTok has around 92 monthly users in the U.S. alone. A federal judge in Florida yesterday ruled against a state order that would force schools to either open in-person classes amid the pandemic or lose funding completely. The ruling said it's unconstitutional to require public schools to open for in-person instruction because doing so, quote, "arbitrarily disregards safety and deprives school boards of the right to decide when to reopen classrooms based on local conditions." The ruling marked a victory for the American Federation of Teachers, which sued Governor Ron DeSantis over the order last month. It was the first such challenge in the nation. The weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 91 degrees and mostly sunny. In New York City, it's 91 degrees as well and mostly cloudy. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Amara Everett.